again, the young man's going to share his thoughts with us tonight. Again, I've been in love with him for at least 75 years. And I hurried back here to the airplane thinking, you know, maybe he'd come in about the same time as me, but he was lazy and he didn't get here for at least 40 years after I got here. But I love him anyway, and it's Art Dennis McDonald.
Well, Millie, I got as great as I could, as quick as I could for you.
You didn't. You were lazy.
Oh, there's a big crowd. Hi, everybody. Well, it's a perky day, isn't it? Perky. Well, once again, Millie asked me to come speak, and I don't know why. I have to be careful with this thing. Michael has a way of editing me to where I say unspeakable things sometimes, so I'll try not to let that curb my enthusiasm. Yeah, Millie asks me to speak all the time, and I have literally nothing to say. My life, my spiritual life, most of my life, it moves at a glacial speed. There's not a lot of quick progress, not a lot of updating to give. You know, my Indian guide in my first writing that Millie gave me years ago, he made reference to something about, I have many to tell of my experiences. And I don't know what audience that is exactly, because most of the normal people I tell my experiences to, they get quite alarmed. So again, and this crowd especially, you know, you're all very, very spiritually advanced. There's not a lot that you haven't heard. Most of you have lived through it all. There's not a lot new that one can share. So it's a little bit intimidating. And then, you know, you stand up here like some Millie, and, you know, she's got these direct angel writings that she can whip together and come out here and lay something on you or, you know, or whip up a ditty for you so she knows exactly what she's supposed to talk about. Comes in here. And, you know, and all those professional ministers, they have this master sermon book that they give you when you graduate that has a whole year's worth of sermons in there. Just in case you don't have anything, you can just whip one of those out and lay it out. Look very polished and professional. So I don't know. They tell me it's not nice to stand up here and talk about you all, so I'll have to talk about myself. I asked Nicole? I asked her what I should talk about tonight, and she looked at me with a really flustered-looking expression for quite a little while. You still have time to put in a request. Well, and let me just preface this, too. Okay, it's working good? I'm learning how to talk a little bit better. I like to try to talk and not be so rule bound and stuck onto the sheets. And I'm kind of not a real big fan necessarily of book reports. Of coming to church and having people give me a book report. Sometimes it's good and all, but I'm afraid I'm going to have to weave a little bit of that into the story, and I'll try not to bore you with it, but let me just start at the beginning. I'm going to tell you about last year. Last year was pretty rotten right up until Thanksgiving. And Thanksgiving came, and everything just turned around, and it just finished at such a high note, probably one of the highest places in my life ever. I had a big five-year real estate project that I've been working on that finally paid off. It actually paid off. You know, it made me feel like this big blight of career and work and financial blight just kind of like ended. And the universe smiled down upon me and made my efforts somewhat worthwhile. It's a wonderful feeling. And in my relationships, which, as you know, a lot of you, my relationships last year were kind of kind of mixed. We'll call it a mixed bag. At the tail end there, I really got a chance to utilize some of those alarming experiences that I mentioned about. I utilized those with a friend of mine, and I actually had some experiences and some wisdom to share that really was helpful and meaningful, and that's nice. And at Christmas time, I had a really wonderful chance to watch a friendship with some people really evolve into almost a family relationship, and I got to spend Christmas over at their house on Christmas morning and open up presents, and it was just wonderful to see how embraced I was by these folks. So there were a lot of really good things that came to fruition right about the end of the year. And, you know, it takes me about 50 years to get a little bit of success going. So yes, I'm slow and I dawdle, Billy. But it looks like I might be getting there after all. So I'm kind of in this high spot, and I'm riding this high spot, and it's kind of like in the back of my mind I got a little bit of, okay, yeah, but what's up next? Something's next. The shoe's going to fall, something's up, you know. What's up next? And I've been kind of wondering what my spiritual path is going to be doing next and what's my next lessons and things. So I'm enjoying my life just fine, except you know that little period of time between when you just go to bed at night and when you just wake up in the morning and your brain is not quite your own yet, and these little funny things that come bubbling up? Well, all of these little funny things that started bubbling up were these little irritating memories of little failings and little stupid things that I did, you know, stupid things. Not major big things, but little things that when you think about it, kind of makes you cringe, you know, little cruelties. You know, the kind of things where you have to sit and you kind of think, did I do that? You just kind of, oh, no, you know. So, you know, and I'm talking about things like throwing dirt bombs at people that can't throw them back, and, you know, yelling at people that can't yell back. I mean, not big, big, earth-shattering, awful things, but things that kind of, you wake up and you think, that wasn't a very nice way to wake up, that was it. So, I got a few of those things that kind of just kind of like bubbled up on the radar, these little regret things. And one of the things I knew last year that I had to do that I conveniently put off was a bit of a forgiveness project. Some things happened last year that kind of worked me over a little bit, and I know that I had to do some forgiveness work. And then with all these little regrets coming up on the screen, I figured, oh yeah, that must be the next thing that's up, is to do this forgiveness work. So, also, a good friend of mine gave me a book on forgiveness out of the blue. Really, I don't know why, but it's a little book of forgiveness. So somebody gives you a book like that, I suppose you should pay attention. And it's a great book. It's by a guy named D. Patrick Miller. It's Challenges and Meditations for Anyone with Something to Forgive. And it's a beautiful, kind of a philosophical book, and it gets into all kinds of sweet things that kind of make sense if you think about them long enough. And, you know, there's a whole chapter in here on the politics of forgiveness, and it's real philosophical. And I read it, and it was all very nice, and it wasn't a practical thing in there that I could actually apply and use that I could find. See, I don't know much about forgiveness. I've done very little of it, apparently. I do know that what's been suggested to me is that if you got something you need to forgive, you just pray about it for as long as it takes. You just keep praying. Ideally, you pray for the other person to have what it is you want. You pray for them, and sooner or later, long enough, one day you'll wake up and all that bitterness and all that angst and all that hatred magically goes away. And that does work. I've done that, and it does work. And I bet you if you were going to just have one tool to work with for forgiveness, that would probably be the one. But I decided I wanted to look into this a little bit more and see if there were some other things that I should know. So I tracked down this other book, and it's called Forgive for Good by a guy named Dr. Fred Luskin, who is the director of the Stanford University Forgiveness Project. There's a whole forgiveness project up there. Guys studying this stuff, and the guy's done a lot of work. He's done a lot of work with, survivors of the war in Ireland, and a whole lot of people that got a whole lot of stuff to forgive. So fascinating little book, and this little book is like a real how-to, practical how-to-do-it manual. It's got steps and everything, and so I pulled this one out, and what I want to do real quickly and simply and without boring you too much is kind of summarize it a little bit and hit the high points. A lot of it you guys already know. But he talks about, you know, the things we have to forgive are grievances. We get these grievances when things turn out different than the way we want them to. We either don't get what we want, or we get something we don't want, or we lose something we had that we still want. Something turns out not the way we want it to. And when that happens, it's usually very easy for us to find somebody to blame who's responsible for this. It's almost never us. It's always somebody out there that has done some dastardly deed to us. And they did it to us. These things happen to us against our will. So we're clearly victims. So it's really easy to point to who is responsible for these things. And another characteristic that this guy found about all these grievances is we tend to take them very personal. You know, these things were definitely just directed exactly at you. Occasionally something like this might happen to somebody else, but it's a very personal event usually when we have something awful befall us. Doesn't matter if thousands of other people have a car accident. If you have a car accident, you know, they were out to get you. So you take these things personal and, you know, why did this have to happen to me? That's the question. He talks about a lot of these grievances arising from what we have unenforceable rules. We just have these rules set up that we expect the world to follow, and we have absolutely no ability whatsoever to actually enforce these rules or to actually make people follow our rules. We just have these rules. Like, you just can't force your spouse to love you, no matter how much they ought to. And your business partner, they ought to be fair. We all know they should be fair. There's a rule that they should be fair, but sometimes you just can't force the situation to allow them to be fair. And, you know, if you do get into trying to force them, you rapidly learn that you're powerless and you begin to feel frustrated and you get angry and all of the feelings that accompany these grievances begin to set in. So, you know, there's a bunch of these. People should be nice to me. I have to be loved. People shouldn't lie to me. And friends should be loyal. And in the top one on the list, I shouldn't have to suffer. Other people have that one too. That's a little rule that we all love. Patty, I'm so glad to see your mom and dad here too. Hi guys, thanks for coming. So anyway, all these unenforceable rules are the things that lead to anger and bitterness and a lack of peace. And actually, you see some of the folks with chronic, long-term, you know, grievances that they're not able to let go, and their whole life becomes defined by bitterness and loss and not pretty. So, and he talks about how the unenforceable rules kind of warp your judgment a little bit. Over time, you know, your brain actually gets a little bit twisted. And you end up actually blaming people and giving away your power. And let me share one that I just, one of my favorite ones. This one's a recurring theme. I just figure that God knows what my heart is, and He knows what I want, and He just ought to provide it for me. That's not a hard rule to understand. It's like I do my part, and He should just step up and do His part. Now that's just a little rule that I walk around with, and it's perfectly reasonable to me. Well, I'll get back to that a little bit later, but the final key ingredient that he talks about in these grievances, and this is one that I really hadn't thought about a whole lot, but he talks about the grievance story. It's the story that you tell when you get a grievance that you like to tell over and over again, the repetitive, obsessive, you know, the person done me wrong story, and let me tell you about this. And you could just, there's no end to the number of times you could just delight in dragging these stories out and telling them again. If you can find somebody to listen to it again, you're happy to drag it out and tell them. And the thing is, you know, it kind of, you get stuck in this powerlessness and the hurt and the bitterness. And telling the story again, well, it just makes you feel the same crummy way that you did when it first happened. I was noticing this a couple of times ago when I talked. I was trying to give a talk on gratitude, and I was telling everybody the story about my sister-in-law and how she accused me of stealing the brown towel. You guys remember that story? Yeah, I was visiting my brother, and I brought a brown towel with me, and I left the house, and I was over at my friend's house on the way out of town visiting and saying goodbye, and I get a call on the telephone, and it's my sister-in-law who says, you know, I got her brown towel, and she wants it back, bring it over. And I tried to tell her that I didn't have her brown towel, and, you know, I'm sorry, and there must be a mistake, and she was not hearing any of it, and she actually got in her car and came over to my friend's house, came over to get her brown towel. And I was just dumped that. And there's no way to defend myself. And finally, I mean, I just, in exasperation, I just had to surrender. And I just, okay, have the towel. And she looked at it and she says, that's not my brown towel. Well, no, you're right, it's not. And she got up and left without so much saying sorry or anything. But she'd worked me up into such a state. I got a resentment about this that I just couldn't let go of for quite a long time. And last time when I was here and I was relaying the story and I was telling you about how dastardly the deed was, I started to get really uppity again about it. And this is one of the stories I prayed about. I prayed about forgiving her for, it took 3 weeks. Took 3 weeks to kind of get there. And so I found out if I tell the same story again, I get back to not feeling so forgiving. And so this grievance story is a big part of this whole game of forgiveness. And so the book goes on a little bit, and it's real simple the way it kind of ends up talking. You know, he says, of course, these are the steps to heal a grievance. You want to become aware of these unenforceable rules and actually look at them and identify them and then, you know, change them from rules to little hopes or wishes or, you know, intentions. You know, don't cling to these unbendable ideas. I got a good friend, Bob O'Hare, who, you know, he was forced to take retirement early under unpleasant situations, and it just wasn't in his plans at all, and you know, his whole financial world was thrown in, and it was just, he just really got upset about this. And then he got, retired, and he's going along just fine, and then his heart gives out, and he's got all these other health problems that just developed, and all of these great plans that he had just kind of like, things weren't working out the way he wanted. That's what happened, and he got a little bit Well, he finally figured out that he didn't make plans anymore. He just stopped with the whole plans idea, and he just merely made intentions. That's how he runs his life today, with just simple intentions. The other suggestion, of course, is you just got to learn to take things less personal. I learned a long time ago not to take my business life personal. The corporate world will teach you that. And then a year or so after that, I began to learn how to not take my personal life so personal. And that does sound funny, but sometimes that's what you got to do. You know, and a lot of times people are, you know, they're not out there purposefully trying to offend you. I really think the woman just wanted her towel back. She wasn't really out trying to tick me off or anything. But and then the other thing that he mentioned you got to do is take responsibility for your feelings and stop blaming and stop looking outside yourself for the causes of your feelings and your frustrations and stop looking outside yourself so much for the solution. And that blaming keeps you stuck and you give your power away to people that don't have your best interest in mind. So kind of stop doing that and your forgiveness is facilitated. And then he goes on and he talks about this thing I'm still learning then. I'm learning about this, how to change the grievance story. Change the story, he says, to a hero story. He says, if you do the first three things I just talked about identifying the rules and stopping the blaming and stop taking things personally, your story, I guess, automatically begins to slowly change of its own accord. But there's no reason why you can't just manufacture and create your own hero story, too. And so he kind of talked about that a little bit. And you can talk about how the situation, you know, required you to kind of learn how to come to cope and overcome adversity. And you can change your story from one of helplessness to one of empowerment. And, you know, put the victim stuff behind you by taking a larger perspective of the story and of the situation. You've done this before.
Yeah,
daily. Oh, daily, okay. Well, how many other people already know everything about all this stuff? Okay. Because I don't know what I'm supposed to talk about up here now. Come on. So anyway, these are the things that I'm going through right now, and I appreciate you listening while I mumble through them a little bit. So he talks about forgiveness means that your story actually changes and that your grievance is no longer in control. And the key to constructing this hero story is to figure out what your positive intention was, what the positive intention that was thwarted by this grievance event. So it goes something like, you know, you're upset because you didn't get what you want, or you're getting what you don't want, or you lost something, and it interferes with you achieving a goal. And what you want these things for is for your well-being. And your well-being is the goal here, and somehow these grievance events, they interfere with you reaching your goal. Simple enough. Sounds straightforward. Oh, why didn't I think of that before I read the book? So the story, you can begin to change it from being just about the pain to being about the goal. And you identify what the positive intention was that kind of got you hooked in and got you so upset, and what it is that you've been thwarted about. Does that make sense, Brother? Thwarted about? You're a writer, editor, speaker. Okay. Like, for example, I'll just give you an example. You know, the poor woman doesn't have to tell the same nasty stories about her ex-husband who ran off with her best friend. Instead, she can talk about her intention to create a loving partnership and how that relationship that didn't quite work out offered her things to learn so that she could then go on and create the relationship that she wanted the next time. There's a hero story. And I guess it doesn't have quite the angst and all of the let me sit you down and tell you about this, and all of the... Oh, did I mention that I'm a sniveler and a whiner? The reason why I like these grievance stories so much. A lot of you are here for my sniveler and whining talk. That was a few weeks ago. Were you here for that? Anyway. So you create this hero story. But the question you have to ask in order to heal is, how do I tell a story that helps me to move on from the past and meet my goals? So the hero story, it integrates the loss that you have with your long-term goals, and it focuses your intention within the limitation that life imposes. So it's like, how do you make your intentions, your goals happen in the midst of life on life's terms? How do you do that? Now, he offers up a question to help you figure out what this positive intention is for yourself, because when you're in the midst of this grievance stuff and this hatred, and it's hard to think about what your positive intention is behind all this. And so he asks you to think about, how would you describe the good effects on your life if the grievance situation never happened, or if it worked out perfectly? So, let me give you a couple of examples of kind of how I've been playing with these ideas in my own life here just lately. And one of them, I'll go ahead, I'd use my sister-in-law thing because it's such a clear, simple example for me, and it's a good test case. Anyway, she accuses me of stealing this towel. And my unenforceable rule is that people should know that I'm trustworthy and loyal and worthy of love and acceptance. And I really did take her accusation personally, especially when she's accusing me of this stuff right in front of my friends. And I felt powerless over this situation. There was really nothing I could do to enforce my rule, really nothing I could do at all other than surrender and just offer up my towel. Well, my positive intention in this situation, you know, is to be viewed as trustworthy and to have the acceptance and confidence of family and friends and to be welcome and trusted. And so I can change the focus of my story to be about how I work towards achieving that trustworthiness stuff. And even though I was really embarrassed and hurt with her accusation, and even though it was actually in the end conveniently and fortunately revealed that I really didn't take her towel, I did end up kind of like doing what I needed to do to kind of restore some peace in the situation and to kind of try to remain somewhat civil and you know, did throw in the towel. And so, you know, my friends did see this, and they could see that if nothing else, I wasn't a thief and I wasn't a troublemaker. I'll just put it that way. They could see that I was somewhat trustworthy and welcome to be around. And they went ahead and gave me this wonderful little ribbing, this little kidding. As I was getting ready to leave, too, I was getting ready to go in the car, and I had a little food with me, and I pulled this banana out. I guess I started to eat this banana or something, and my friend, she goes over to her counter. She picks up her bananas, and she says, "Did you take one of these bananas?" It just set me off. She laughed. So anyway. Now, there's another application. We've got plenty of time. Another application here I want to talk about, because last year I really got mad at God. Set up a big resentment with God. I kind of really think sometimes he just toys with me. I just get sometimes where I think I can't trust the answers to the prayers. You know, his answers are just cruel sometimes. You know, I'll ask for something and he gives me almost what I ask for. Almost, but I'm kind of missing something. It's like you ask for an automobile and he gives you a car, but it's got no steering wheel. Or you ask for a house and he gives you a house, but the roof leaks, so there's no paint on the wall. Or, you know, I've mentioned this before too, I think up here, that, you know, I ask for an old world girl and I get everything, and the whole old world girl is there in every element except for, you know, one of the key ones, like compatibility. Just not there. Everything else about, you know. And I don't know, I didn't really think that I had to actually spell it out to God that, yes, I wanted that too. You just kind of think that he would be able to know these things. But we learn in class that even spirit knows every thought we're thinking. God ought to be able to tune in to and just accommodate these things. And, good, there's one. Anyway, so, you know, that's one of my rules, too, I mentioned earlier. God ought to be able to do this thing. So he's kind of proven unreliable in my life experience, I guess. I'll just put it that way. And I do take this stuff personal. Other people don't have these problems. They get their whole prayer answered. No? They get a fresh donut. They don't get one that's already been half eaten. So, you know, he's supposed to be able to connect the dots and fill in the empty spaces, you know, just the way I want him filled in. He knows these things. So, my grievance story, well, you just heard it. And isn't it awful how God plays with me like this? Gives me the appearance of answering my prayers and really when you open it, it's like, where's the beef? Well, so my positive intention in this situation, it basically, I guess it is to have access to all of the components of a happy life. That's all I want. I just want to satisfy some of my basic desires and simple needs, and so that I can then go on to be an example of how God's love can build a happy and meaningful life. Not asking so much. So, how do I construct this hero story out of this? And I don't know, I'm still trying to figure it out, but, you know, so God throws me these curveballs, and he jokes with me. I'll have to call it just, he jokes with me. And I've got to learn to kind of, and what I've been doing is kind of learning how to give God the benefit of the doubt. And suspend my unenforceable rule that maybe even though I think he's supposed to do that, that's not the way he's going to do it all the time with me. Anyway, because I take it personal. So, I got to figure that God is leading me to my happiness and usefulness somehow anyway. And he's probably using such experiences as those as a tool for helping me to grow in faith or grow in grace or grow in patience or grow in some other character attributes that are going to be necessary at some point. And maybe by restricting some of my life activities now, I'll grow in those areas that will allow me to you know, reach my goals and have the kind of life that I'd like. So, maybe it's true. Maybe I'm not supposed to have an old world girl bringing me coffee in the morning while I'm still in bed. Maybe I'm supposed to bring in the coffee to a new world girl. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not sure. Anyway, so that's a couple of examples of kind of how I've been playing with these concepts a little bit. And so far, and I'm almost done, I promise. But so far I've talked just about how I've tried the technique for forgiving other people and for forgiving God, and I haven't figured out how to really use this stuff to forgive myself yet. Especially on these lots of little things that come up. And the instructions aren't quite so clear in this manual of how to do it. But There's some excellent stuff. I want to read you in this other philosophical book. It says, forgiving your flaws and failures does not mean looking away from them or lying about them. Look at them as a string of pitiful or menacing hitchhikers whom you can't afford not to pick up on your journey to a changed life. Each of them has a piece of the map you need hidden in its shabby clothing. You must listen attentively to all their stories and win the friendship of each one to put your map together. Where you are going into a forgiven life of wholeness, passion, and commitment, you will need all the denizens of your dark side working diligently on your behalf. A rage of frustration boiled over, and you struck, changing your life and someone else's forever. There is an insult or an injury you dealt that cannot be taken back or dismissed. This seems to be proof of your sinfulness, the personal stain that won't ever wash out. In fact, it is the dye of your initiation into a more serious life. If you continue to live on automatic, you will do more damage. You must now learn to pay profound attention to your inner workings, which mirror the workings of the world at large. You must become an eminently practical, everyday philosopher of pain and redemption, changing your habits and exemplifying change for others as you go along. This is the work you chose for yourself when you attacked. It only begins with apologies and recompense. See what I mean about philosophical? The easy steps are a little bit easier to work with, but lots of truth in this, lots of truth. So obviously, it sounds like this self-forgiveness thing is not a short-term effort. It's going to take a while. And a couple of other things occurred to me, too, quickly I want to share. You know, in Millie's circles, I've been going to her classes, and we have these circles for a long time. And you know, it's always nice when spirit comes. But I kind of got to the point where I like it when big-name spirit comes. You know, I like it when Einstein comes and when Jesus comes and, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt and, you know, presidents, dead presidents come. And you know, when your grandmother comes, it's nice. But, you know, I come to realize, though, after looking at all this, you know, the relatives come, and it's such a wonderful opportunity, and so often what happens is there's such a healing that goes on, a revelation from the other side of the love and of the reasons for, you know, family dynamics, or the opportunity for people to actually revisit their hurts and their frozen angers and their misperceptions with the eyesight of spirit from the other side. It allows for a whole lot of those grievances to, you know, to finally get healed. And really, actually, it's, I guess, the most important part and the most meaningful part of the circles as far as, you know, the healing of the planet and the evolution of all of us entails. So thank you for that, Millie. And then let me go on a couple more things. And it's almost time to eat soon. How many people are new here, by the way? How many people are new? 3, 4? Okay, well, welcome. Do you guys have anything you want me to talk about tonight? Yeah, good question. Okay. Ultimately, forgiveness means letting go of this world, a darkened, fractured glass through which we see love only dimly. As our frightened grip on all that is temporary relaxes, we will increasingly find our authentic strength in that which is timeless, boundless, inexhaustible, and omnipresent. Heaven is learned, not simply entered with religion's passport. So looking through this world, a dark and fractured glass through which we see love only dimly, and when they come from the other side and they reveal that love more clearly, it's easier to get beyond the grievances and things. And then the last thing, a few classes ago, Millie actually had a lesson Another one of these little gentle reminders, a lesson on forgiveness. And I got so enthused by this, I actually copied down a few of the lines from it. And I use it as a prayer. I wrote down that, Lord, give me the ultimate strength needed to forgive not only others, but also myself. Because, Lord, with my spiritual unfolding, I can see man clearly and with more wisdom. I place myself in your hands of forgiveness. And then the Spirit goes on and says to relax and make this mark in your memory as a step to mental, spiritual, and physical freedom. Polish your clean slate each day with the cloak of love. Polish your pathway with the touch of love, and life will be your vibration. So learning to forgive is to lift your light vibration, and lifting your light vibration is learning how to live in heaven. There. That's what I'm trying to learn this year. And I appreciate you all helping me to learn it by listening. Thank you.